Good morning and happy Friday, ladies and gentlemen. Today is Friday, March the 15th of 2019, and we would like to open our Structural Technical Advisory Committee meeting. Please, let's begin with a roll call in order to confirm our quorum. Answer by saying here. Jim Schock?
Here.
C.W. McCumber?
Here.
Steve Strawn? Craig Perino? Joe Hetzel? Dan Laverich?
Here.
Joe Kim? Jamie Gascon?
Here.
Warner Chang?
Here.
David Compton?
He's going to be out.
David Compton is out today. Michael Garacio?
This is Joe Kim. Steve Strawn up here.
Steve Strawn, Joe Kim. Craig Perino? Joe Hetzel? We do have a quorum, so we can move ahead. Do we have any other TAC members who have joined the line that did not make roll call?
Yes, this is Craig Perino. I just joined.
Thank you, Craig. Joe Hetzel or Mike Garacio? Okay, let's move ahead. I'm Marlita Peters. I'm going to help facilitate your meeting today. Let's introduce the staff in our room here.
Mo Madani,
Justin Vogel,
Tom Campbell,
Chris Howell,
Joe Bigelow,
Jim Hammers.
Thank you. Do we have any guests on the line that would like to be acknowledged for the recording?
Dr. Jayant Abhishekar, I'll be one of the presenters for item C on the agenda.
Thank you, Dr. Obi-Sakara. And John, who was that, please? Your last name?
Joe Belcher.
Hi, Joe. Anyone else on the line that would like to be recognized?
Mike Sukoff from FIU.
Mike Sukoff, thank you. Anyone else?
Martina Rogers from FIU.
Repeat your name, please.
Martina Rogers from FIU.
Ms. Rogers, thank you. Anyone else? TAC members, let's approve our agenda as posted if there are no changes.
Dan Laverich, move to approve the agenda as posted.
Thank you. Second?
Perino, second.
Laverich, Perino, all those in favor, please vote by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any disapproved? Move ahead to approve the previous minutes of February 7th of 2019.
Average move to approve the minutes of February.
Thank you. Second?
Perino, second.
Thank you, Mr. Perino. All those in favor, please vote by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Now we'd like to move ahead to our item on the agenda today for review. Mo, do you want to open?
Yeah, this is Mo Madani, and good morning. The main subject of this meeting is to review the interim report for the potential implication of sea level rise and changing rainfall for communities in Florida using Miami-Dade County as a case study. And the purpose of this study is mainly to evaluate whether a new flood elevations would increase the flood risk due to increasing sea levels and changes in rainfall extremes. And with us on the line is Dr. Obi-Sakara to give us the status and present an interim and present the interim reports.
Ladies and gentlemen, I just want you to be mindful of any background noise going on in your offices. We can hear a conversation going on. So be mindful of what's happening around you as everything does pick up on the intercom. Dr. Obi-Sekera, are you ready?
Yeah, I am ready. Can you see my screen?
Yes, sir, we do.
Okay. Can I go ahead and get started?
Yes, sir, please.
Yes. Excuse me.
I can see both of your screens as in the presenter view rather than the full screen projection of your slides.
Yeah, let me go ahead and see if I can change that. Give me 1 second. Is it better now or it's the same?
Same. It's the same. That is correct, though.
Okay, let me see if I can, how is that now? Is it better?
Yes.
That is correct. Thank you, sir.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So, I'll go ahead and get started. I want to thank Mr. Madani for working with us on this research proposal. I also want to thank the TAC structural for funding this research and, last year. And we have made significant progress on that and wrote the interim report. And I think it's best for me to go through some slides because there's a lot of material on the interim report. I think it's good for me to present some of the technical details. And also, to get some feedback from you, because you are supposed to finalize the report by end of June, and I think this is important to get some interim feedback. So I'll go ahead and get started. My name is Jayanta Obi-Sekera. I'm the director of the Sea Level Solution Center at Florida International University. I also have a team of others whom I will introduce very quickly. And I was the primary lead for this project to look at sea level rise implications for Florida Building Code, and we looked at 3 aspects that I will describe, and they were all in the scope of work, if you have a copy of that. Anyway, so FIU project team, I'm the lead PI, they call me OP, and I've had a lot of experience in water resources, but primarily climate change and sea level rise. I was involved at the national level on developing sea level rise projections for EOD and also national climate assessment. So in our team, I have Professor Mike Sukup. He's a professor in Department of Earth and Environment. And also Dr. Tiffany Troxler. She's the Director of Science at the Sea Level Solution Center. We also have Michael Irisari. She's a professional engineer. She's an affiliate for Sea Level Solution Center and conducts a lot of modeling that we are going to report on. And unfortunately, she couldn't join us today. And then also Martina Rogers, she's a doctoral student who is working with us on this project. So my outline today is primarily to give you a background why sea level rise is important for the building code in various aspects of the building code, how future conditions might warrant some changes to various parts of the building code, and I will talk about them towards the end. But in the scope of work, we committed to conduct 3 tasks. Task 1 is to develop groundwater modeling and mapping, and I will explain why we should be doing that. And then also update some of the rainfall extremes, particularly the rain load, estimates that you have on the code. There's a lot of data that have become available, and to update those rainfall extreme maps that you have on the code. And the way we think what kind of recommendations might be warranted on the building code. We understand the process that you go through. I understand you might be meeting next week. But at some future date, you might take our recommendations and follow through by making recommendation to the building code. I consider this is to be a very important study because we are looking at the next, let's say, 50 years of planning horizon. And I think it's important to incorporate these environmental changes that we might be expecting in the code, so we are more resilient, in particularly in the coastal areas. We use Miami-Dade as a case study because it's probably impractical to do the entire state of Florida. But this is, I consider this to be a sort of a quote-unquote model study that might be helpful to look at other parts of the state if necessary. I will go through progress of each task. First, I will give you the background and then go through each task separately, and then we can have a discussion and some feedback. And so I just want to introduce the type of implications of sea level rise and particularly rainfall changes. And I think a lot of literature suggests that these types of environmental stresses and shocks will be important for urban areas where you have a lot of buildings and other infrastructure. In terms of stresses, you look at sea level rise and all the indications are that it's rising and will be rising at a faster rate. We also will have to consider storm surge, possibly increasing storm surge due to sea level rise, and possibly due to increased frequency of storms that have been talked about. In South Florida in particular, we have to emphasize the saltwater intrusion. We have a very porous geology, and the saltwater intrusion will occur at a faster rate or at an accelerated rate compared to other parts of the state, perhaps, and that could have some implications for some of the parts of the code that you already have. So issue that had not been discussed extensively is, as the sea level is rising, with the saltwater pushing to inland to the freshwater lenses or freshwater aquifers, the groundwater level is going to come up, because as the sea is rising, that higher pressure will push the water table elevations higher. And that obviously will have implications for not only for buildings below ground, you know, parts of the building that may be below ground, but also above ground, because as the water table elevation is pushed up higher, the flooding potential will also increase. So these are the considerations we have in conducting this study. Then finally, as I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of data that have become available. I think it's timely to update the rainfall estimates that you already have included in the code. So this is, we consider this is to be a beginning of a major effort that are needed to get the data and possibly consensus among your commission members and the TACs to make sure that we have solid technical background when we make recommendations to the commission. So let me talk about sea level rise. I'm sure some of you are familiar with the topic and have heard a lot of news reports about that in Florida. You know, when you look at tide gauges all around the state, unfortunately there aren't very many, but the ones that we have all show a linear increase for now. But the expectation is that this rate of increase is going to be accelerating in the future, and there are some indications of that already. And they are of the order of 9 to 14 inches per 100 years, and you might think that is very small, but in Florida, because we have very flat topography, particularly along the coastline, this could be significant in many ways, particularly water management, flooding, and so forth. There are other data that we have looked at, for instance, Water Management District, South Florida Water Management District in particular, have data at downstream of their coastal structures that also monitor water levels, and basically this is the ocean side of the control structures, and they also show significant increase, particularly since about 2011. And it's been an interesting phenomenon to understand why is this sea level rising at a fast rate in the last 10 years or so. And this could be a persistent trend or it could be an episodic trend. So we have to consider the potential for this acceleration. And by the way, this is what has been predicted in the literature as to what is to be expected. But there is also natural variability that we need to consider. So, I'm not ready to say that this is a persistent trend that will continue at this rate, and that's where the science comes in. What is the best available data we should be using for this study? And the other aspect is what is called a nuisance or recurrent flooding. You've heard probably a lot of news articles or seen news articles and maybe media coverage of this king-type flooding that originally happened in Miami area, but it seems like all through the southeast region you have this king tide or just tidal flooding during the month of October. And the frequency of this happening will increase in the future. So this is not from hurricanes. This is what we call sunny day flooding. It just tides alone will flood certain areas. And obviously, this is not something that's not factored in the building code. So what sea level rise projection we should be using? Nationally, there are many levels of projections. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers have projections. Communities in Florida are beginning to develop their own projections, but fortunately in the southeast, we have a Southeast Climate Compact which had a scientific committee who recommended these projections. And then you're seeing a very broad range of projections. So the vertical axis is the relative sea level, for example, at Key West. And the horizontal axis goes from 1992 all the way up to 2100. And there are several curves on this graphic. And basically, that displays some of the uncertainties in the sea level rise projection. And I can go into that if necessary because of the ice sheet melting in Greenland and Antarctica. So the models are not very good at predicting, long-term sea level rise, but these are the projections that the Southeast Climate Compact recommended people use for planning purposes and implementation purposes. So, for example, you see that blue shaded area. That is what the compact, and I was part of that committee, recommended we should use for future planning. But if you have a very high risk project like a nuclear power plant, we recommended that you might want to use a high risk project because a high risk curve, which ends up at 2 meter or 6.6 feet by 2100. So it's a risk based approach for planning purposes. But in this study, we actually looked at the bottom and the top end of the blue shaded area, and those are the numbers we are using for developing groundwater table elevations and others under those types of sea level rise scenarios. The other issue is, and this is an animation, I'm not sure if you're seeing it, probably do, and as the sea level is rising, the saltwater front will accelerate faster towards inland, and that wedge will basically could touch some of the well fields and contaminate the well fields, and that's an issue for water supply. And you see on the graphic on the left, the red line is the saltwater front, basically the base of that saltwater front, and the blue dots are where the well fields are. The important aspect is as the saltwater is pushing inland, the freshwater table will come up, and that's why you want to know where the water table is going to be in the future in urbanized areas where you might be, let's say, permitting buildings and others. So I think that's important in many ways, as we will see later, not only flooding, but also some of the structural integrity, geotechnical, and all this other aspects of the building code. And the one on the bottom is basically the kind of rock we have, like Swiss cheese. We can't stop the salt water coming in or sea level rise by building dikes like the Dutch would do. So they're going to come inland through groundwater. So I also thought it might be useful for the tax to see some of the other climatic indicators, like the temperature is going to be increasing depending on the greenhouse gas scenarios. So you have this blue and red, green and red areas, depending on the future, mitigation efforts, you might be seeing higher temperature increase or lower. And I know we are not addressing that. That's something you might want to consider in future discussions. And the rainfall, the climate models are not so skilled in the rainfall projections, but indications are that we are going to have higher rainfall amounts and rates in this area. So the question is, when we update that rain load figure, how do we account for that potential increase in rainfall extremes, so that we are somewhat conservative in making a recommendation for that potential in the future. Not only the average rainfall, but the extreme rainfall obviously is important for the rain loads. And so our task, one of the tasks in this project, is to look at all the available data, not only the historical data, but the climate model data. And this study that I'm not going to go through the details, and this was conducted under my direction when I was at the Water Management District, to look at how do we change these rainfall extremes, or what we call intensity duration frequency curves, for planning purposes in the future. Fortunately, NOAA has the latest and the greatest, so we will be looking at can we incorporate the NOAA data into the code, and how should they be changed in the future based on the climate model output. So let me go through task by task what we were charged and where we are. So task one is to develop the average, what we call May wet season or May to October groundwater level maps. And this is becoming important because as the sea level rise is rising, as I mentioned earlier, the groundwater level is going to come up. So the bullets are exactly from the scope of work that we had. We were charged to take the existing Miami-Dade groundwater model developed by the USGS to create wet season water table map. And so for this modeling to be done, we need a lot of new information that I'm going to mention in a minute. Our focus will be 2060 to 2069. I assume that the buildings are planned for several decades, maybe 50 years, and you need to anticipate what should be expected in that type of time frame. We will be using future ocean boundary condition to reflect the sea level rise from the unified projections that I mentioned earlier. And so we will also, we were charged to look at climate model outputs to determine potential changes in rainfall under future conditions. We've done a lot of research in these topics, so we are very diligent to make sure that we have actionable science on whatever we might be recommending. So in terms of the model, this is a report from USGS, and it actually has a fairly sophisticated groundwater model, probably the best available for this area. And we had done quite a lot of work to bring this model up to speed at FIU computers. And then you see that graphic there, it's the level of detail that you have. It has 500 meter by 500 meter grid cells, simulating both groundwater and surface water in the region. So it's very sophisticated and has the ability to well represent the groundwater table that we might be expecting under future environmental conditions, which I will explain in a minute. So we have already done the some improvements to the model. We all got all the model code and software up and running at FIU. We developed a future land use condition and groundwater properties, because I think we expect that the land use will change in the future as well. We develop future rainfall conditions from through the study up to now, and future ocean boundary condition, that ocean water level that we should be using to drive this model. And we also did not forget that Everglades might be restored over the next 50 years, so we expected, or thought we should be using whatever the Everglades might look like after restoration projects are undertaken, and I will explain what we use in our study. For the land use, we actually went to Miami-Dade County, master plan or comprehensive development master plan, and we actually did several improvements using water management district data. But we're going to be using 2030 land use because we didn't have anything better. And then we had to also make significant improvements because the model requires, increase in impervious areas for computing runoff and so forth. So we did quite a bit of work to get a representative land use. That is available in your interim report. The other issue was that when we look at the future sea level condition, there's a dilemma here because nobody is going to predict exact sea level, 50 years from now with all the storm surge and wind and waves and all that. But what we have is from NOAA tidal prediction. So we wanted to know if we use tides alone in the future, which we can predict, including sea level rise, we wanted to know, should we do a sensitivity analysis to see just the use of tidal prediction alone have any difference in that water table map, because we are looking at average water table map for the entire county. And we did this study, and then we computed the future tidal prediction according to a sea level rise curve and actually used that as a boundary condition. And we did this sensitivity analysis. So basically, the idea is, can we simply use the predicted tide, or what is the difference if you use the actual water level? We wanted to know if that assumption of using predicted tide along the sea level rise curve is adequate or not. So what we found out was our ultimate product that we are looking for is the average groundwater table. It's less sensitive. It's not sensitive at all in terms of that average water table. In other words, there might be some temporal effects near the coastline, but when you average it out over 10-year period, that average water table is not going to be sensitive to that difference in ocean boundary condition. So I think that was some good news that we should be able to use predicted tide by 2060 along a sea level rise curve. And we verified this by looking at several wells near the coast. The top and the bottom graphic, you see they are near the coast. There's some minor variations, but the middle curve is for interior well. That difference in boundary condition did not make much of a difference in terms of water level, but when you average it out, it kind of vanishes, and significant difference. So this was some good result that we could follow through, and also it's important for us to demonstrate that getting that the data that we need to justify technically whatever we are doing. So we actually did some modeling of the basically the sea level, and one interesting thing is you see two columns of graphics here. The first column is for the low curve in that shaded sea level rise projection, and the right column is the high curve. You can see some areas of the landscape is going to be flooded by rising sea level, simply by rising sea level. And then so that's something we probably should keep in mind when we look at the building code in the future, and we can get some idea when that might happen. What potential for that to happen. So we actually got the actual water levels for predicted tides for 2060 to 2069 along the boundary of the Miami-Dade County. And that is the environmental condition we can expect in the future. This is kind of a complex slide, but I will simply explain it. There's a lot of climate models out there, like 120 downscale climate models, and we have looked at all of them, and we feel that some of them have significant biases in the output. So we look for the model that has the least bias and appropriate for South Florida. And so we picked the climate model output that meets our criteria. And on the right-hand side, you see the seasonal changes that might be expected in the future, and we needed to incorporate that into the rainfall that we drive the model with. So I think that's an important aspect of our study that we did. Regarding the Everglades restoration, so we looked at a computer model run from the Water Management District called SURF Zero. That is probably the best available Everglades restoration run that's available to get the water level data from there. The important thing is that the water level on the western side of the county, if it goes higher, it's going to induce more seepage into the urban area, and that could affect the water table. So I think that's an important aspect we needed to consider for that boundary condition as well. So in summary, we have updated the ocean boundary condition for the 50 years from now. We have updated the rainfall boundary condition, and also we have updated the Everglades or western boundary condition to drive the model so we can get a fairly reasonable prediction of future groundwater table in the urban area of Miami-Dade County. So this is a very preliminary result we got. We are ready to run the model, almost ready to run the model. We have gathered all the data. What you see on the left and right are the average wet season water table rise. As I mentioned here earlier, as the sea level is rising, the water table is going to come up. So this is the net increase in water levels or water table or groundwater levels, both in the wet season and dry season. So the important aspect here is this is the type of data we would use to make recommendation for the code, that spatially, obviously, it's not uniform. So certain areas you may have a higher rise than the others, and that needs to be considered in our recommendation. So the task two was basically to update the rainfall maps. I think in the rain loads are in a couple of places in the code, and the charge was, this graphic that is out there in the code is really dated, like 40 years old, I think, 1970s, TP40, and really think this is an important task that we have. We have another 30, 40 years of data on rainfall. Our goal is to improve that 100-year, one-hour rainfall, that's part of the rain loads. But at the same time, since we are doing the analysis, we will actually do more than 1 hour. Rainfall will also go up to higher durations, as you can see. So this is an important study that will benefit not only the building code, but maybe also the planning across the entire state that we might be able to do. So we have assembled all the data, as we mentioned in the scope of work, from the Water Management District, Florida State University, state climatologists, from NOAA. So we also got the climate model out for the future, and we know how to look at these model runs to identify the skills in this climate model. If they are not skilled, we will be very careful and do some bias correction in predicting rainfall. So I think this is an important contribution to the recommendations we might make. The task three is probably what you care most about. How do we use these results for making recommendations to the code? And we went through, and as you can see, these are the subtasks that we had included. We're going to be looking at rain loads, figures 16.11 and 11.06 in the SBC plumbing section. We'll be making recommendations to that. And then when it comes to flood loads, there's several places that we'll be looking at, chapter 16, 31 and also chapter 3 and a couple of other places, and I will mention them in the next couple of slides. So we'll be going through that very carefully, looking at our results, and we'll make specific recommendations for you to consider in the future. So we'll be looked at plumbing section and building section and residential section. I don't know if you call them sections or not, but we've looked at all three, and we will be looking at all these sections and the FBC building, FBC plumbing, FBC residential, and for rain loads, both building and plumbing. And I think there are several places this increasing water level, for example, will be important, not only in flood loads, but also geotechnical and structural issues. And more importantly, I think this issue of flood depth and duration might also be a factor that we need to consider, particularly Chapter 3 in the residential part, Section R3-2. So it's like a preliminary report on this. You know, obviously it's a straightforward task for us to improve the rainfall maps you have in the code. But I think the other parts will be looking at the rising water table and increased potential for flooding. In these chapters, chapter 16, chapter 18, chapter 31, chapter 3, R322, and plumbing chapter 11 and appendix B. So, with that, there's one other consideration we have, and we don't have to look at this, but I think we just want to point out that the soil water intrusion is an important aspect as the sea level is rising. That might be something that's important for the coastal areas, particularly the high hazard areas. So that's something you might want to consider in the future. We are not looking at coastal high hazard areas in terms of, flow velocities and others, because that requires storm surge modeling and that type of modeling, but I think our resources are limited to this groundwater modeling and also rainfall modeling and making recommendations. So with that, with my favorite closing slide, I will open up for any questions. So welcome any input from the TAC, which is very important to us in finalizing our report.
Thank you, Dr. Obi. TAC members, any questions? Hearing none, is there anyone from the public?
I have a question. Oh, I'm sorry. Let's go to the public first. It's all right.
Anyone from the public with questions or comments? No?
Yeah, I have actually maybe two or three questions. One has to do with when you do modeling, and especially we use, you have done a lot of modification on these models, and normally the outcomes or the predictions normally need to be validated and replicated. What level of validation expect to be done before you really actually say, well, these predictions are actually close to what's happening. The other thing is that, do you know if any other states that have similar situations like in Florida have looked at something like this and maybe establish the standard for construction that you can maybe validate toward and compare? Right. Because really when you start establishing standard for construction, we're talking about also there is the economical impact and the cost and all that. Right. So I just want to be curious about the confidence level in this at this time.
Yeah, right. Those are very good questions. So let me take the first one. In terms of validation, we started out with the fairly trusted model developed by USGS. It's probably the most well-known agency to develop, excellent models. And we made an effort to make sure that that model has been calibrated and validated. There are certain versions of that model that were developed after that. We thought it was very important for us to demonstrate the credibility of the model by having a calibrated and validated model. And so USGS has documented that, and we felt very comfortable it has been validated properly. Now, when we apply for the future, and as you know, that, you know, we haven't experienced the kind of sea level rise that we have today, or we have, you know, we have in our projection. So it has to be a sort of a scenario approach. In other words, what is the scenario that we should be planning for, and how do we account for building code? Because we need to make sure that, you know, we don't underpredict or we don't overpredict. And I think you brought an important point of economics of this. So it's your decision to see what is that sea level curve we are going to integrate, and then look at the future conditions from that validated and calibrated model. I think that's an important aspect of what we are trying to do. But I think your point about economics is very important. So that's something that, you know, obviously we haven't done. We have the ability probably to do it in the future, depending on our recommendations. And I think that's something that if you think it's important, may need to be done in the future. If you're trying to be very safe in the recommendations, but what is the economic impact for the building community or the stakeholders? So I think those are very important, valid points. But I can assure you that this is the best available model that has been calibrated and validated. I'm not familiar with in other states. I know on the surface water side, people are looking at effect of sea level rise on flooding, for example, in New York and others, but that's something we can look around and maybe document in our final report what is out there. We can try to do some review.
All right. Well, thank you. Yeah, this is what I think.
Yeah.
Any other questions? TAC members or the public? Hearing none, that would adjourn our meeting today. Let's do final...
We need to accept the report.
Oh.
We need...
Okay. So, TAC members, if we could have a... Go ahead.
Lavridge moved to accept the report.
Thank you.
Lavridge moved to accept the report.
Thank you, Mr. Lavridge. Do we have a second?
Second by C.W.
Second by C.W. McCumber. Any further discussion or questions? Hearing none, all those in favor of accepting the report, please vote by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Let's do a final roll call for TAC members. Jim Shaw.
Lavridge question.
Go right ahead, sir.
Now, I have a question of Joe Bigelow. Joe had taken a survey regarding having another webinar meeting on April 2nd. Joe, what's the status of that meeting? Has that been confirmed, or is it still up in the air?
It's set. It's confirmed.
It's confirmed.
We're moving forward.
I would greatly appreciate that when you confirm your meetings that you send out a confirmation. Otherwise, you know, I can't finalize my calendar. I'm sure other people are in the same way. I really would appreciate that in the future.
Yeah, I think really we normally do that because we are in the planning stage. We were trying to look at other meetings. So yes, no doubt we will let you know. No doubt.
Thank you, Mom.
You're welcome.
Any further questions or comments? We'll proceed with roll call. Please answer by saying here. Jim Schock?
I'm sorry, I was on mute. Here.
That's okay. Warner Chang?
Here.
David Compton is out. Michael DeRossio is out. Jamie Gascon?
Here.
Michael Gerasio's here.
Oh, thank you, Michael. When did you join the...
I was here in the beginning. I just missed roll call. I was here for the minutes and the agenda approval.
Thank you. Jamie Gascon.
They're here.
Joe Hetzel. Still absent. Joe Kim.
Here.
Dan Laverage.
Here.
C.W. McCumber.
Here.
Craig Perino.
Here.
Steve Strawn.
Here.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Have a good day and happy Friday.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. See you guys next week.
All right.
Thank